Hello, everybody, and welcome. First things first, let's do a sound check. Please press 5 on your phone keypad or whatever keypad you have, depending on how you logged in. If you logged in on your computer or via Skype, you should have a phone keypad. Just press 5 on your phone keypad or the equivalent so that I know that you can hear me. Perfect. Okay, got it. Got the feedback. Awesome. Okay. My name is Alan Side, and you're here for a call titled How I Got Divorced and Kept My Family Together. I'm really excited to share this story with you. First, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. I am keeping the lines muted in order to preserve the quality of the recording for future listeners, and also just to lower noise, background noise on this call itself. I plan to speak for about an hour and then open it up for Q&A for about a half an hour after that. I do have a little flexibility to go over. So again, I'm keeping the lines muted in order to preserve the quality of the recording and the quality of the call from background noise. I will open it up to Q&A toward the end. So I'm going to ask us just to get present for this, and I'm going to ask you to turn off your email, turn off your phone, just put distractions aside. Don't multitask during this call. If you have to multitask, then I'm hoping you get to listen to the recording later. I want everyone as present as possible for this call. So turn off your email, your phone, and all other distractions. And we're going to do a little breathing exercise just to get present. I do this with a lot of my clients, and I learned this from one of my coaches. I'm going to do 3 breaths, and I'll walk us through it. When you're ready, I ask you to take one deep breath, and on the exhale, you're going to let go of everything from the past. Here we go. So now we'll take a second deep breath, and on the exhale, I'll invite you to let go of everything from the future. Here we go. Okay, we'll take a third deep breath, and on the exhale, I want you to get really present in the here and now, and I want to invite you to really come into your body as you get present on this last exhale. Here we go. Okay. Well, I have a little reading. This is a poem by Dorothy Hunt, and it's called Peace Is This Moment Without Judgment. Do you think peace requires an end to war? Or tigers eating only vegetables? Does peace require an absence from your boss, your spouse, yourself? Do you think peace will come some other place than here? Some other time than now? In some other heart than yours? Peace is this moment without judgment. That is all. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. Peace is this moment without thinking that it should be some other way, that you should feel some other thing, that your life should unfold according to your plans. Peace is this moment without judgment. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. That's by Dorothy Hunt. This moment without judgment. Okay, well, I want to start with some acknowledgments. First of all, I want to acknowledge my dear, dear friend and co-parent, soon to officially be my ex-wife, Patricia King. Tricia. Big acknowledgement to her wisdom, her groundedness, her maturity as a human being. I want to acknowledge and express gratitude to so many teachers and mentors that I have had on my path, and every one of them has contributed their own nuggets of wisdom. And the many, many authors, counselors, therapists with whom I have interacted on my path and who have contributed to my path. And in particular, I want to acknowledge Dr. Marshall Rosenberg and the incredible process he developed called nonviolent communication, which has allowed the mother of my children and I to create a really harmonious environment for our children amid this incredible transition. And so I want to acknowledge Marshall Rosenberg and the many other nonviolent communication trainers, NVC trainers, who have contributed to my learning and who have offered their empathic support and compassion during this process. So I'm going to first give you a really brief intro to me, and then I'm going to talk about my past prejudices around relationship, talk about what does success mean in a relationship, talk about some basic relationship principles, and tell you more specifically about my journey and this process that I'm going through with the mother of my children. I was born in New York City, but grew up in Mexico City, Mexico, always knowing that there was more than one way to see things, because growing up bicultural, that's what you grow up with, is multiple perspectives at a young age. When I was in my teens, I became aware of the dire ecological crisis that we're in, and it's only gotten worse, and all the predictions that I was reading about in the 80s have borne out to be true or even worse than what everybody thought back then. I was pretty freaked out as a 16 and 17-year-old. I grew up in an environment where it was pointed out to me that all the problems in the world are interrelated and interconnected. Racism, sexism, pollution of the oceans, climate change, the way we treat animals, all of this is interconnected and interrelated. And we can spend our time focusing on symptoms or on the symptoms of symptoms, or we can spend our time focusing on root cause. I knew that I could continue to live my life semi-unconsciously and be part of the problem, and instead I made a conscious decision to be part of the solution. I didn't know what that looked like, and so I decided to research best practices for how to live in harmony within ourselves, with each other, and with the planet. And that search continues to this day. And the result of about 30 years of research in that area will culminate in an upcoming program that I'm calling The Compass, that outlines 8 different areas. The organizing principle is the compass rose, north, south, east, west, and then the corners. 8 areas that involve basic competencies for people who are working on themselves and who also want to make a bigger difference in the world. I began studying this process, nonviolent communication, in 1995 with Dr. Rosenberg. I became certified as a trainer in 2003 and have worked in many, 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 many contexts. Fortunately for me and for my children, my spouse, Tricia King, my soon-to-be ex, we're still wrapping up the divorce paperwork, but I'll tell you more about our story. She's been studying it about as long as I have, so a little bit over 20 years. And that has been huge for us, having those tools and skills. I work primarily as a coach and mentor to people who have a project or a vision, and the gap between where they are and seeing this project or vision completed is daunting or too big, intimidating, and I help people break it down into a step-by-step so that they can fulfill this big project or vision that they have. And I welcome you to check out my testimonials page if you want to see what my clients have said about working with me. I also work with individuals, couples, families, with the nonviolent communication work, helping people create better personal and professional relationships, helping people hear each other, helping people resolve conflicts, and giving people tools and skills to prevent misunderstandings and conflicts. I also work with a collaborative law group locally. This group is made up of lawyers, mental health professionals, financial specialists, who work with couples wanting to go through collaborative divorce. So in a collaborative divorce setting, each person in the couple divorcing has their own lawyer, but the lawyers are working together as a team to ensure that they can facilitate the best outcome possible for everybody. So working as a team, sometimes a child specialist is needed, sometimes a financial specialist is needed, and I work in these cases as a communication skills specialist, helping the couple hear each other and start to build some trust to get to agreements to conclude their divorce in a way that's mutually agreeable and ideally mutually enriching. So that's a little bit about me and my background. When I first started studying nonviolent communication with Dr. Rosenberg in the mid to late 90s, and I learned that Marshall himself had been divorced a couple of times, I thought, you know, I don't know, it led me to kind of question his integrity, or, you know, maybe he had a great tool and a great process, and that happens often with visionaries, is they have some incredible piece of knowledge or some amazing process to share with the world, but their ability to actualize it in their own lives is highly imperfect that way. So I kind of judged Marshall for having been in multiple marriages, and I assumed that having good skills in nonviolent communication would always equal no divorce. Since then, I've come to realize something different, and I'll repeat this later, which is that no amount of care or high level of communication skills can overcome the fact that two people may want very different things for their lives, or they may be on very different life trajectories. So anyway, I had this preconception about what nonviolent communication was and what it did and how that impacted or how it influenced relationships and marriage and divorce. So I think that really begs the question, what is success in a relationship? What constitutes success for a relationship? Now that question could be different for each person. Is it the longevity of the relationship? I mean, I've seen couples who've been together for 40 years and they never talk. I've worked with couples where they feel like housemates or they're totally shut off from each other emotionally, but they still sit down, have a cup of coffee, each one reading their own newspaper. But they've been together 40 years, so maybe longevity is a sign of success. Maybe it's one of many indicators. What about emotional closeness? What about shared vision and purpose? So ultimately, I think success in a relationship is defined by the individuals in that relationship. It's not up to me to define what success is for you in your relationship. I do want to share a couple basic principles. I'm working on a book called The Little Relationship Book. That's the working title anyway. And it'll be a sort of an artsy coffee table type book with one principle per page. You might be hearing more from me about this book that I want to put together. I'll share with you a couple of the principles that I plan to put in this book. The first principle is a metaphor of two trees. So if you have two trees in the forest, you can imagine one of these trees falling over and leaning on the other tree. We would call that dependence, right? It's an inherently unstable relationship. One tree is entirely depending on the fortitude of the other tree to hold it up. And if the other tree goes down, they both go down. Or these two trees could be leaning on each other. In a lot of circles, we would call this codependence. And still, if one of them goes down, they both go down. It's an inherently unstable image of relationship. If you have two trees that are standing completely upright, parallel to each other, each tree can stand in its own strength. Each tree can stand strong on its own, and the roots have a chance to intermingle, the branches have a chance to intermingle, but they're no longer in a situation of dependence or codependence. So I would refer to this situation as a relationship of self-dependence and interdependence. We're always interdependent, but we don't necessarily want to be dependent or codependent. We want to be self-dependent and interdependent. So that's the image of two trees standing, each strong in their own right and parallel to each other. The other image I'll share with you for a relationship, and this is an important principle as well, is the image of a pyramid. Now, picture a pyramid divided into four sections. The base of the pyramid is consciousness or spirit, but essentially that deeper level of alignment. Are we connected on the level of consciousness or spirit? The next level is emotional. The one after that is intellectual. And the peak of the pyramid is the physical realm. So it goes from consciousness to emotional to intellectual. And the peak of the pyramid is the physical realm. So if a relationship is based on physical attraction only or primarily, that would be like standing this pyramid on its tip, which is an inherently unstable situation. So the pyramid is standing on its tip, which is the physical realm. And so we need other props from the physical universe to hold it up. So this tippy pyramid now has 2x4s, planks, boards, holding it up. One of those can be called, let's buy a house together. Another one can be called, let's get married. Another one can be called, let's get a dog, or let's have children. And suddenly you have all these boards holding up this inherently unstable structure. Even if your relationship started out that way, there is a way to flip this pyramid back on its base and to create alignment on all these levels. So at the deepest level of values, that's what I'm referring to when I talk about consciousness and spirit, the very deepest level of values, life purpose, life direction, that's that deepest level. And then emotionally, do we have alignment emotionally? Are we compatible emotionally? And then intellectually, do we enjoy talking to each other? Even if we don't agree on everything, do we have stimulating conversations that are also respectful or where we learn from each other? So is there alignment on the intellectual level? And then finally, the peak of the pyramid, physical realm, is there alignment and connection there? And that includes sex. That includes sex, sexuality, sexual expression, sexual connection. Is there alignment there? So ideally, in a relationship, your pyramid is right side up on a solid base, and you have alignment on all these different levels. I wanted to share that important principle with you as well. So, Trisha, who is the mother of my children, and who is someone that I care for deeply, and our friendship is entering a new phase, and it's actually deepening. She and I were an exclusive monogamous couple for 22 years. We got together as a couple in 1993, before our 22nd birthday, so we were 21 years old. We were kids. That's how I see it now. When I was 21, I thought of myself as very mature. Looking back now, I realize, man, we were kids. We got together then, and a lot of harmony, a lot of rapport, a lot of connection. A lot of amazing adventures together. And always these questions of, you know, are we really aligned? Are we really aligned? In that time, we reached out for support, which is an incredibly important thing for couples. You see, there's this very destructive myth in our society, and it ranges from individuals to couples to families. And the myth is we have to go it alone. Very destructive myth. On the individual level, you look at John Wayne, one of these Lone Ranger characters, the rugged individual. So I think I have to go it alone. I have to solve all my emotional problems on my own. I have to solve everything on my own. Very isolated, disconnected kind of reality. That extends to couples, and as couples, we buy into this myth that we need to go it alone, and we don't avail ourselves of the support that's possible. And the same with families. Sometimes families circle the wagons and isolate themselves from others when they're going through hard times, when what would most serve them is to bring in outside support, whether it's paid for professional support or whether it's bringing together the community that ideally you've been building over time. And if you haven't started to surround yourself with community, there's no better time than now to begin that. So we didn't buy into this myth of we need to go it alone. I mean, we worked on it a lot on our own, but we also reached out for support and got help. We had a private session with Marshall Rosenberg, the creator of Nonviolent Communication. We had a private couple session in the late 90s. I believe it was 1997 or 98, right in there. Went in, sat down with Marshall, laid out our, you know, most intimate, vulnerable challenges. He had two things to say. The first was, very impressed at the level that you're able to talk about these things. And I was like, okay, come on, Marshall. We came here for you to fix it for us, so fix it for us. Of course, he didn't have a fix, but he did have one suggestion, and this was the second thing he said. And I want to admit that I walked away very disappointed. But in the ensuing years, I saw the deep, deep wisdom of what he had to say. So the only thing he had to say to us was, stay connected at the level of feelings and needs as long as it takes before going to a strategy. And I think this is important enough to repeat. That stay connected at the level of feelings and needs as long as it takes before going to a strategy. Now, what he meant by strategy is some solution or some, you know, this is what it'll look like. And feelings and needs are the language that he was using in Nonviolent Communication to talk about a language of the heart. How I feel and the needs being universal human needs or what's deeply, deeply valuable or important to me? What's really alive in my heart? So we would stay connected at the level of feelings and needs. We'd get connected there, and then we would try strategies. Things wouldn't work. We'd go back to the level of feelings and needs and connect, stay connected. Things wouldn't work. We'd go back to the level of feelings and needs. And again, we did that ongoingly for years. And what it did is it increased our communication skills. It increased the trust between us. It increased our confidence that we could get through difficult conversations. And it was also extremely challenging because we weren't coming up with the way that we could live joyfully with each other. Now, some of the strategies that we continued to explore included bringing in additional outside support, and we worked with a lot of different people at this point primarily to see if we could get help looking creatively at some of the strategies. So there's a very famous couples therapist named John Gottman from the University of Washington, and one of the things that John and his wife have done is they've researched thousands and thousands and thousands of couples. And they've looked at the patterns for the relationships that work. I'm not sure what measures they're using for success in a relationship. We talked about these earlier, whether it's the longevity of the relationship or emotional closeness or shared vision and purpose. But regardless, they study these patterns in relationships, and now they certify Gottman practitioners. So we went to a John Gottman certified practitioner. I'm not sure if they use the word certified or accredited in that particular lineage, but anyway, we went to a Gottman practitioner, and I want to say something about Gottman's work. I really like it. I think it's great, and I think it's helped hundreds and hundreds of couples. So in what I'm about to say, I'm not criticizing that work at all. I'm just speaking from my personal experience. We had a trial period with this therapist of 3 sessions, and the 3rd session, she had us sit down and talk, and we were talking. And she was sitting on the edge of her seat, waiting for where to jump in and contribute or help us get on track. And what I saw was that there was no space for her to jump in. There was not a place where she could contribute because the communication was so clear and so caring, even though the topics were difficult. And at the end of that session, at the end of our trial period, she said, you know, the 2 of you are where I try to get my clients to, so there's nothing I can do for you. I'm sorry. That was super encouraging. Wow, we're actually doing great. We're where she tries to get her clients to. But it was also super discouraging because we realized that she wouldn't be able to help us. And I want to share a couple of images for you, a couple of other metaphors for you. One is the metaphor that we use to tell our older children once we had decided that we were going to separate and legally divorce, is we told our daughters, you know, it's like 2 fish. It's like freshwater fish and a saltwater fish. And we really care about each other, and we can spend time together in the in-between waters, what they call the brackish water, where the fresh water from a river comes into the ocean, and the fresh water and the salt water mix. You know, a freshwater fish and a saltwater fish might be able to hang out together there, but it's still hard. The other metaphor, and this is usually how I describe it to people, is that our decision, and I want this to be clear to everyone on the call, our decision to separate and divorce is not a decision we took lightly. It was the result of a 20-year NVC conversation. So we didn't rush it. And one of the things that feels great about that to me today is in relation to my integrity, because I'm clear that I left no stone unturned. We left no stone unturned in order to see whether it would work to remain in these roles of husband and wife. So the metaphor is the metaphor of two plants. You know, really, nobody's bad or wrong. It's just that here we were, like two plants, one that thrives in acidic soil and one that thrives in alkaline soil. But we were both planted in the same pot, and so nobody was thriving. So what we've decided to do is transform the roles, husband and wife, to friends and co-parents. So again, nobody's bad or wrong. It's like two plants, one that thrives in alkaline soil, one that thrives in acidic soil. So nobody was thriving. So we decided to do a healthy repotting so that we could thrive. And so it's not an ending of the relationship. It's a transforming of the roles, husband and wife, to new roles, friends and joyful co-parents. In this process, Trisha had an incredible insight that I think was very, very helpful. And I don't know that I would have thought of it myself. And so I just want to give her credit, because I think this one insight made a huge, huge difference. Once we had decided that we wanted to separate and divorce. And I want to be clear. This happened about almost 2 years ago. Okay, so our decision to separate and divorce was toward the end of 2015. But we had been discussing divorce for about 4 years before that. And we discussed it sometimes in a not very charged way. Just kind of like, do you want butter on your toast? I mean, it had that tone to it. Not a lot of emotional charge. And one of the things I remember Trisha saying was, look, I want to commit to happiness. I want to take a stand for happiness. And you're not happy and I'm not happy, so maybe we should just divorce. And I kept saying no, because of the children and the impact on the children. And in my research on divorce and the impact on children, I've come to realize that the thing that impacts children the most negatively around divorce is watching the acrimony, the fighting, the disharmony between parents. Watching that is caustic, very damaging to children. And the other is hearing the parents complain about the other parent, hearing each parent badmouth or criticize or name call the other parent when they're not there in front of the kids, very, very damaging. And I've seen parents turn to their kids for emotional support about how hard the relationship is. Please do not do that. And if you're doing it, stop it right away. If you need empathic support, go somewhere else. Need empathic support, do not turn to the children to get them to support you emotionally or to take your side against the other parent. That's what's most harmful to children in divorce. But ultimately, once we made the decision, separate and divorce, almost 2 years ago, Trisha had this insight that I think was brilliant because it's worked. It's worked very, very well. And what she said was this. She said, look, now that we've decided to separate and divorce, it makes sense that if we have unresolved grievances in relation to the relationship, that we resolve those separately, individually, that we each get support somewhere else. So I will no longer bring my grievances about the relationship to you, and please don't bring your grievances about the relationship to me, because we are choosing, at this point, we're choosing to separate and divorce. We're choosing not to try to work those things out that we tried for so many years to work on. Instead, let's get support separately, and let's resolve those grievances separately so that, this is the important part, so that when we are together, we can cultivate a space of sweetness. Let's not bring our unresolved grievances to each other anymore, unresolved grievances about the relationship. Instead, when we come together, let's put energy into being a good team with the kids. And let's cultivate a space of sweetness so that we can strengthen our friendship in the service of our co-parenting. So I think that was a stroke of genius on her part. It was a very, very important insight, because that's exactly what we did. Once we knew we had decided to separate and divorce, it didn't make sense to bring our grievances about the relationship to each other, and instead we used our time together to cultivate a different kind of space, a collaborative space, a space of teamwork, and a space of showing up for our children. Again, no amount of care between two people, and Trisha and I to this day still love each other deeply. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what my life is like these days. And as I keep going through the call, I'm going to get to this piece. But no amount of care and no level of amazing communication skills can overcome the fact that two people may want very different things for their lives, may have a very different life trajectory. You may be going in different directions. One of you might want to live in the country. The other one might want to live in the city. And you're both very attached to those strategies. You want something different for your life. There's nothing wrong with that. So here's another principle. Relationships go through transitions too. In the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, the relationship paradigm was fairly simple. You got married and you stayed married for your whole life. And if you got divorced, there was a stigma against that, especially against a divorced woman. And we wouldn't allow the relationship to go through a transition if that's what it needed to do. I see couples, I've seen couples who've been together decades, and the relationship is in a sorry state. It doesn't seem to be supporting the individuals. I do want to clarify something that Trisha and I got clear about in 1995, because this gets to the core of this, which is our commitment to each other. When we realized we were in a committed relationship, our commitment was not to be together. This is key, because we had this going back over 20 years. Our commitment was not to be together. Our commitment was that our relationship would support each other's highest. And that commitment that our relationship would support each other's highest was intended partially so that we wouldn't be able to outgrow the relationship. As long as we're still growing and learning, we haven't outgrown the relationship. But we did get to a place where we wanted to transform these roles, husband and wife, to friends and co-parents. So relationships go through transitions too, and it's not about whether or not relationships go through transitions. It's how skillfully and with how much care can you navigate those transitions. So I just want to reemphasize, one of the things that helped us so hugely was Marshall Rosenberg's advice of staying connected at the level of feelings and needs as long as it takes before going to a strategy. Now, the mechanics of how we actually did this, I want to lay out in a future call. I want to offer everybody on this call and people on my list a call called How to Make It Through Difficult Conversations, where I can go more into the mechanics. Because I didn't intend this call to be an introduction to nonviolent communication, or even, you know, I wasn't intending to get into the details of NVC for those people on this call who are new. But I'll mention it briefly, which is that we would slow down the conversations and use a particular tool in nonviolent communication called connecting requests. And connecting requests are similar to other requests where we're requesting some kind of action, like, would you please bring me a glass of water, or would you be willing to open the door for me? These are requests that support the connection. That's why they're called connecting requests. And these connecting requests, be willing to tell me back what you heard me say, and how are you feeling about that right now? Or what's going on for you right now? There's so many ways to phrase them. But essentially, asking for confirmation that the other person received what we said in the way that we wanted it received, that they've understood us in the way that we were wanting to be understood. And the second request of checking in, so how are you doing? What's true for you right now? Managing those requests in a conversation, allowing it to slow down, got us through many, many difficult conversations. So I will offer you another call called How to Make It Through Difficult Conversations. I want to tell you a brief story. I was at an event years and years ago. It was 2005. And I was teaching nonviolent communication there. We had an extended lunch break, and a couple asked me if I would work with them. So we sat down at a picnic table, and I wrote down these two connecting requests on a large sheet of paper. Would you be willing to tell me back what you heard me say? Or could you tell me back what you heard? Sometimes I add, so that I can be sure that I've been as clear as I want to be, just to make it clear that I'm not testing your listening skills. I just want to know that I said it as clearly as I needed to. And the other connecting request of what's going on for you right now. Wrote those down on a piece of paper. I explained my role to hold the container. And I just had them have a conversation with each other. But at the end of each thing, I was going to have them follow it up with one or the other of the connecting requests. So then they had this conversation for about 90 minutes. Every now and then I'd have to slow them down, or I'd remind them about the request, or I would reflect back what I heard if the other person was too triggered. But we, you know, they got through this as much of the conversation as they could in 90 minutes. At the end of the 90 minutes, I asked this couple, so how did it go? How was it for you? And they both said, oh my gosh, it was so hard. It was like slogging through the mud because it really slowed it down. But we made it farther in that conversation than we have in 25 years of couples therapy. Yes, they made it farther in that conversation in 90 minutes than they had in 25 years of couples therapy. And all I did was hold a space, slow it down, and focus on connecting requests. So I want to offer you a call specifically on that piece. Kind of the mechanics of how to get through a difficult conversation. Let me describe to you what my life is like now with my ex, and it's remarkable, actually. And one of the lawyers that I work with in the collaborative divorce work said I'm the poster child of amicable divorce. I don't know about that, but I really haven't heard of another situation quite like this. So I just want to acknowledge one thing. Part of why my relationship with my ex works so well, part of it is due to yes, our work and our skills and, you know, how we showed up. But a lot of it had to do with luck. I mean, if I hadn't met this woman named Lucy Liu at an Alternatives to Violence Project workshop, and if she hadn't invited me to Marshall Rosenberg's first workshop in Seattle in 1995, I don't know that I would have had these tools and that it would have gone as well. We're very lucky in many ways, and so I just want to acknowledge that. So Trisha and our children, over a year ago, moved next door. Next door, I live in a rural area on acreage, so next door is the next property over. So that's about a 10-minute walk, or maybe a 1-minute bicycle ride, or 1 minute by car. But living next door has made dealing with logistics so much easier. If my kids get mad at mom, they can walk up to dad's house. If they get mad at dad, they can walk down to mom's house. And that's happened. We eat dinner as a family. So this is my current reality. We eat dinner as a family 5 nights a week. So that's Sunday through Thursday. Friday evenings, just I have them, so Trisha has the night off. Saturday evenings, she has them, I have the night off, and then we start again. Sunday evening, we have dinner as a family. We've taken several trips as a family. We visited friends in British Columbia, Canada. We visited friends in Port Townsend, Washington, and we took these trips as a family. Trisha and I hug hello and goodbye, and it's actually gotten sweeter the last year. Yes, we've gone through our moments of disconnection since deciding to separate and divorce. Yes, we've gone through moments where she's feeling guarded or I'm feeling guarded, but we keep showing up and cultivating this space of sweetness and friendship and trust. And we're both so committed to our children. Occasionally, when we have time, if the kids are taking care of themselves and dinner's done and the dishes are done, occasionally, we'll sit down and play a game like Scrabble. Last night, Trisha had the kids in town. They were getting back a little later than expected. And Trisha wasn't going to have dinner ready, but I had cooked. It was my Sunday. It's when I cook a bunch of food for the week for myself. And I said, hey, I can hook you up with dinner. I've got food already cooked. Would you like that? She said, yeah, thank you. So I brought dinner down. And she and I had a chance to sit together and have a glass of wine and just kind of catch up a little bit. So it's not perfect. I think we're both still going through our grieving process. It's still hard. I still miss her. So I just want to be honest. It's not a panacea. It's not a rainbow unicorn universe. It's still hard. But given that we chose, as a result of a 20-year NVC conversation, that we chose to transform our roles, husband and wife, to friends and co-parents, it's as good as it could possibly be. I can't imagine it being much better, given what we've chosen. So that's my story for now. I am going to set up this call, How to Make It Through Difficult Conversations. And when I send you the email with a link to the recording of this call, I'll include a link for how to sign up for that. I also want to offer people on this call a discount. I have a downloadable home study course that I created on nonviolent communication. I broke the NVC curriculum down into some steps, you could call it, about 9 different steps. I did some classes, recorded them, and this downloadable home study course includes 5.5 or 6 CDs worth of audio, and it includes a workbook. And the workbook includes exercises and tips for success for each of the sections. I sell this downloadable home study course for about $150 online, and I'm going to give you a promo code. Put this code into there's a box in the upper right that says special code. It'll give you 50% off of this course. This is a downloadable home study course. It's a seminar in your home on the deep fundamentals of nonviolent communication. So I'll give you the URL real quick to go straight to the page where you can buy that. It's bit.ly/NVC Fundamentals. NVC stands for nonviolent communication. And NVC Fundamentals is all lowercase, just one string. bit.ly/NVC Fundamentals. And if you put in the promo code July 2017, and that's all caps, JULY2017, no spaces, just one string, that'll get you 50% off that course. I want to offer that to people on this call. If you're curious about me working with you or with you and your spouse or with your family, you can't hire me until we have just a conversation, and there's no charge for that conversation. But I want to make sure that we're a good match for working together. And if you want to have this free one-hour conversation, think of it as a free consultation or a strategy session so that we can look at, okay, where do you want to be at? What's your goal? And then where are you now? And how can we bridge the gap from where you are to where you want to be? You can sign up for that free consultation at CascadiaWorkshops.com/session, S-E-S-S-I-O-N, Cascadia Workshops, C-A-S-C-A-D-I-A, Workshops, plural, .com/session, CascadiaWorkshops.com/session. That's for this conversation if you are interested in working with me personally. If you're local to the Bellingham, Washington area, we've got some exciting offerings coming up. Please stay on my email list so you can find out about those. And if you wish to donate to my work, there's CascadiaWorkshops.com/donate-here. So CascadiaWorkshops.com/donate-here if you want to contribute to my work and see more offerings go out to the community. That would be awesome. So let's open up the lines for Q&A, question and answer. Press 1 on your phone keypad if you have a question, comment, feedback, input of any kind. I'd love to hear how me sharing my story and some basic relationship principles, how that feels to you, or any questions you have. So I have Anita on the line. Hi, Anita.
Hi, Alan. Thank you. It was very inspiring. I have a question. You said that Marshall Rosenberg suggested that you connect at the level of needs and feelings as long as it takes. I don't fully understand as long as it takes for what? For feeling connected?
Thank you. As long as it takes before going to a strategy. And the reason for that is that let's say that you and I want to figure something out. If we focus on the strategy only or on the solution before knowing the deeper level of what's important to you or what's important to me, then that solution or that strategy, we don't know that it's actually contributing to all the needs because we don't know what the needs are. So that's why we want to take some time to connect first before we solve or fix. So if we spend time to connect first, now the needs are on the surface, and now you understand what my needs are and I understand what your needs are. We want to create that kind of quality of connection. Once we know what each other's needs are, then we can go to problem solving. Because once we're connected, the problem solving becomes collaborative, and the solutions we come up with are more likely to cover all the needs. We will have buy-in, and the solutions will be more durable. I'm curious, Anita, is that? I can say more, but I'm curious whether that answers your question.
Would you mind if I rephrase and then you can tell me if I've understood correctly?
Please, please.
So as if I feel like I have fully expressed myself, feel that I've been understood by you, and I fully understand you, that's what you're talking about, the connecting.
Yes.
I get it. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. I do want to say just a touch more. What we're looking for, what nonviolent communication looks for, is the high quality of connection out of which we'll stimulate sort of a natural generosity, a natural joy of giving that happens for human beings. All over the world in every culture, people are playing one of two games. The first game is called Who's Right and Who's Wrong? And the second game is called How Can I Make Life More Wonderful?
Mm.
So it turns out human beings love to play this game of how can I make life more wonderful or how can I contribute to life. We love that, but it only works when we have choice. As soon as we feel coerced, manipulated, pressured in any way, suddenly we don't want to. So we're looking for the high quality of connection out of which we spontaneously want to contribute to one another's well-being. It's like... Anita, have you ever had a dinner guest and that person really enjoyed what you made for them?
Yes.
How did that feel to you?
It's a very good feeling.
Isn't it? And you had choice whether or not to make them dinner. Now, imagine that dinner guest threatens you for the food or tries to guilt trip you into feeding them. What happens to that natural joy of giving?
I hate everything about cooking, then.
Yeah, exactly. It's no longer any fun. So what Marshall was talking about, stay connected at the level of feelings and needs as long as it takes before going to a solution or a strategy, is pointing to this concept of high quality of connection. And I want to name two levels of quality of connection. We named one of them so far. And the one we named is, you trust that I understand your needs, and I trust that you understand my needs. So let's call that mutual understanding. That's one level of quality of connection. That's very important, mutual understanding. There's a deeper or higher level, depending on what metaphor you want to use. There's a deeper level of quality of connection, which is you trust that your needs matter to me, and I trust that my needs matter to you. Boy, if you can get there, now the problem solving is really, really is collaborative. And so we'll be working together to find that solution. So when you reflected it back to me, you got it exactly right. It's we spend time at the level of feelings and needs to at least get to this point of mutual understanding. Once we understand each other, then our problem solving is more likely to reach a strategy that's mutually agreeable or mutually enriching.
First level, understand. Second level, trust that it matters.
Mattering. Yeah, mutual. The first one's mutual understanding. The second one is mattering. So I trust that my needs matter to you, and you trust that your needs matter to me.
Thank you, Alan. I want to make sure others get a time to talk.
Yeah, I do too, and there's only one other hand up is why I took the time that I did. Okay. Thanks, Anita.
Thank you, Alan.
Let's go to another hand up. Joshua.
Hi, Alan. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Hi, Joshua.
Hi. First off, I want to thank you for sharing such an intimate aspect of your life with us.
You're welcome.
My question involves with when you and your partner would get into like a heated discussion and then it's like bedtime and the conversation hasn't come to like a resolution, what were your guys' kind of rules with like going to bed and sleeping on it?
A couple things. We got in trouble multiple times trying to process when we were tired. So we actually established a rule, kind of like a mutual understanding, that we were not going to process when we were tired. I'm less present to you. I'm less present to me. I have less mental clarity. I have less mental stamina. So the misunderstandings are more likely to get triggered. So that was the first thing, is we just agreed that we wouldn't process when we were tired. So again, if it's a heated conversation, it starts getting late and we're feeling tired, then with as much care as we can muster, we land it gently. We don't end it cuttingly. Unless somebody stomps off in a huff and they need to sort of blow off some steam and sit with it, fine. And that happened, and often it was me walking away. But not walking away like I'm leaving, more like I need to do some self-care here before I can come back to the conversation. And often it would be stated like that. So with as much care as possible, we would land it and agree to continue the conversation later. Now, one of the other strategies that we used for years, and we started using this in the late 90s, is we agreed that it was okay to take time out in service to the conversation, in service to the relationship. So there were plenty of times, I mean, I'm remembering one specific situation where I just wasn't connected to what was going on for me. What was running through my head was, what am I feeling? What am I needing? What am I feeling? What am I needing? I had no idea. I was totally disconnected from myself. And I turned to Tricia and I said, would it work for you if we pause the conversation for a couple of hours and I'm going to go try to get more connected with myself so that we can come back and continue the conversation? Fortunately, she said yes, that worked for her. And we came back and the conversation could continue. So that's something that we've done often, is notice when we need a timeout in service of the conversation. It's not just somebody walks away or leaves, but usually with an understanding of, we'll continue this tonight or we'll continue this tomorrow, and always finding a time when we could continue. So does that answer your question, Joshua?
Yeah, that helps a lot. I like the idea of landing the conversation instead of just leaving it hanging, which doesn't tend to lead to very productive sleep.
Yeah, landing it and always with reassurance, like, your needs matter to me and I want to continue this conversation. And sometimes I would just say something like, I'm so tired right now, I'm not feeling the mental clarity, and I'm really wanting us to have a higher quality of an outcome here. So I'd rather that we take a time out and continue the conversation later. So
right.
Yeah, just that acknowledgement that the strategy to take a time out isn't to bail. It's in order to serve the conversation later.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to your next discussion. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah. Thanks, Joshua. Any other comments? Questions, feedback, press 1 on your phone keypad or the equivalent of the phone keypad that however you logged into the call gave you. See a hand up from Mare. Hi, Mare.
Hey, hi. Hi. Thank you so much for this conversation, for this call. I'm really appreciating. And I wanted to... I think it's it's acknowledgement for the depth of what you shared about. I have the same question as Anita about, well, how do you know how long it takes? I mean, just to say as long as it takes didn't satisfy me until you added what you added about, until each person understands the other's point of view, their needs, what's going on for them. And I'm just acknowledging and appreciating that second level that you put in there about it's not just enough, quote unquote, to understand where another person's coming from, but to be clear that it matters and to communicate that mattering to the other person so that there's that confidence. It's not just mutual understanding. I could understand you very well and still not want you to be attended to in the way that you want, but to get there, I'm just really appreciating that second level that you mentioned. So appreciating that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anything else, Mayor?
Well, lots else, but not right now.
All right. All right. Well, feel free to raise your hand again a little bit.
Oh wait, I do have. I want to encourage you to finish your principal book, the book that you spoke of. Do you have a timeline about when you will have that completed?
I don't. You know, ideally, I want to crowdfund it. So I need to work the outline out so that I can put the vision of it out there in a clear way. As you're probably aware, the publishing industry ain't what it used to be, and going out to a publisher and getting an advance is even a longer shot than it used to be.
Yeah.
And so I think I want to crowdfund it, and I'm narrowing down illustrators that I'd like to have for that book. And I want to finish it too. I've got about 6 books that I want to get out there, Mayor.
I'm feeling some book
constipation. I definitely want to push those out. Thank you for the encouragement. And that's right now the plan that I have for completing that book is maybe creating a very simple crowdfunding campaign so that I can really focus on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah.
Let's see. Irene, Vereen.
Hello, Alan.
Hi.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
Oh, well, you know me. We've worked together for a little while from Scotland.
Scotland, so fun. Yeah, I just love the global nature of these calls. It must be late at night where you are.
Not really. It's about 7 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, okay. I thought it was later. So, hi. Mm-hmm. Talk to me.
Hi. Hi, Alan. Okay. So, first of all, I want to say that I really appreciated a couple of things in what you said, and I hope I'll remember them. The first one is I really loved this insight about changing roles from husband and wife to friends and co-parents. I think there was a stroke of genius there on Tricia's side to see that as an opportunity and to see the relationship being of a different nature, not completely, because you were already co-parents. But I can imagine that completely changing the intention that you were bringing to, from husband and wife to friends, there's a different purpose to the relationship. And I can imagine that re-energizing what your relationship was about, so finding new purpose in it because you redefine the role. So I can so see the creativity around that, and not just for an intimate couple. I can imagine that being very applicable to a number of relationships. So I want to affirm that very much.
Thank you.
And now I can't remember the other thing I wanted to appreciate about what you said, but I have a question.
I'm listening. Uh-oh, did you hit mute on your side? Did you accidentally press your... Uh-oh, we lost Marine from the call. I hope she comes back shortly. There's a hand up from Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hey, Alan. Sorry for the delay. Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Okay. Hey, I missed a few moments due to technical difficulties, and I wonder if you could repeat, if you've said already, the information about this call being available for others to see and to listen to. Or is the link going to be available on your YouTube channel?
I'll email everyone who registered for the call. I will email you once I have the recording up and ready. I'll email you with a link, and my goal is to get that to you within 48 hours, but hopefully today.
Sweet. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, let's go back to Viren. Hi.
Hi.
I lost you from the call as you were about to ask your question.
I know. My connection's not great today. Yes, my question is, Tricia and you were really committed to strengthening your capacity to connect, just understanding each other, and you both learned nonviolent communication. I know many couples who, like one partner is learning nonviolent communication and would love their spouse to learn it as well so that they can connect more meaningfully. And actually one of the reasons why they are getting into trouble is because there isn't this mutual commitment to self-awareness, to learning a way of connecting more meaningfully, and it's really, really hard. How do you work with couples who are in that situation where there is, in my interpretation, an asymmetry in the commitment to do inner work, to resolve some of the more profound issues in the relationship?
The way I work with couples in a situation like that is similar to the way that I would work with any couple, because what happens is that, you know, usually one of two things happens. The person who was hesitant to live in a space of self-accountability and like owning their stuff and working on themselves, working on their communication skills, in the work with me, they start to get a taste of insights that they're having about themselves, or more clarity or more effectiveness. And that intention sort of turns around and they start to get excited about it. They start to experience it. And that sort of hesitancy will shift often for that person. And then they experience a huge life change. Whether or not they choose to stay together as a couple, this person individually has had a big shift in their approach to their own inner work and interpersonal work. The other thing that sometimes happens is that difference becomes more and more glaring and more and increasingly untenable in the relationship. And usually they usually end up transitioning the relationship because, it's just as frustrating to be the person who really wants to process and wants to have a lot of clarity and the other person's not meeting you there. It's just as frustrating to be the other person who doesn't want to process so much, doesn't want to connect so much, doesn't want to talk so much, and to have the other person really wanting that. So sometimes that'll happen. So the way that I work with couples concretely, and again, each situation is unique, but usually we'll do a discovery period, and then I offer them a proposal for what I think the work ahead will look like. But usually I'll do a one-on-one with one person where we do some pretty deep, like healing and reconciliation role plays. And then I'll do one-on-one work with the other person. And I'll do that to set the foundation for then meeting the three of us together. My sessions tend to be longer than your typical therapist or counselor sessions, so we actually go deeper and get more done in the amount of time that we have. So that's what I do now. So either the difference will become more glaring and the relationship becomes increasingly untenable, or a shift happens and both people show up to really work on it. Does that answer your question?
Sure. That was very helpful. Very clear. I like I like the clarity around the two paths. Yes. So, yeah. And, you know, one way that we're working together to increase self-accountability, self-responsibility, and communication, and the support there. And the other way is the differences are more and more obvious, and we get some support to transition to a different relationship. Yeah. Thank you.
And I want to emphasize that the one-on-one work that I do with people in the couple, the individual work is crucial.
Mm.
Because a lot of insights come, a lot of shifts come in a space that's really safe. If a couple has had a lot of pain between them and the trust has diminished, then it's working in the one-on-one space that helps them have some insights in a space that's less guarded, or they don't feel like they have to protect themselves from the other person. So the one-on-one work is really essential in service of coming together. I'll give you the most extreme example that I've worked with. I worked with a couple that was there was a domestic violence protection order against one of the people in this couple, and one of the parents could not see the children except for 1 hour out of the whole week, and only with supervision. And they had already begun a trial process, like a litigation, an adversarial legal process, where the families of each person had testified against the other person, and they were in a war already through the courts. And then it was in this context that they started to work with me. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow. I had to amplify my circle of support to really be able to support this couple. And we did a 3-hour session with one of them, then a one-on-one role-playing, 3-hour session with the other one, and then a 3-hour session with both of them together in the span of a week. And then the following week, repeat, 3 hours with one of them, 3 hours with the other one, 3 hours with them together. And again the following week, they were able. Now, for a while, it felt like they had a foot on one horse and a foot on the other, a foot in adversarial litigation and a foot in trying to work with me. Eventually, they were able to take their foot off the litigation horse and just work with me. And now they're living together again. I think they're still trying to figure out if their relationship is going to be viable, but the domestic violence protection order was lifted. And, I mean, it shifted everything. The lawyers involved were amazed. I wasn't doing anything special besides NBC, but the lawyers thought it was magical. One of them had thought it wasn't mediable, but all I did was this work. And again, the one-on-one work is very powerful to prep the soil, so to speak, for the work that we do, the three of us.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting. It makes me think that it's really hard for couples who are experiencing difficulties to go anywhere if there isn't this support that you're talking about. And that happens too, you know. That happens too. You know, one of them will be really up for it and the other one kind of not even seeing that there is a problem. And that's where it gets really hard. This all makes sense. It's really helpful. I like the way you're describing it and the power of holding people on a one-to-one basis before helping them discern where to go with together. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, and the healing and reconciliation role plays are so powerful. Yeah, they really contribute to the work, the three of us. Great. Thank you, Vivian. Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Feedback, press 1 on your phone keypad if you have a question, comment, feedback, input of any kind. We have 10 more minutes scheduled in the call. Anybody have any questions, comments, feedback? Okay, the things I mentioned earlier in the call, such as my 50% off my nonviolent communication downloadable home study course, the other offers I expressed, I will put those in the email with the link to the recording so that you have all that in one place. If you have a question, comment or feedback of any kind, please press 1 on your phone keypad. Otherwise, I'll assume that we're all set and we're ready to conclude the call. Going once, going twice. So I'm going to unmute the lines so that we can all say bye to each other. Bye to each other. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.